Welcome to our Free Society speaker series, and it is such a privilege to have you here and an honor for us to have you on our campus here at Hannibal LaGrange University. Free Society here at HLGU stands for what we call three critical foundations: democratic form of government, free market economic systems, and culture institutions like the church. And so the speakers we bring to campus, we believe, embody those, at least one or if hopefully all of those. And you really, I believe, embody all of those as you see our vocation, our life through the lens of a biblical worldview, through the lens of our faith. And so we're just going to talk a little bit and chat, and I'll have a few questions for you, and Mr. Arrow will have a few questions for you as well. Is this your first time visiting Hannibal?
I believe so. You know, you know that old Johnny Cash song, I've been everywhere.
Right. Yeah, I know you've traveled around a lot, but you know if your travels had brought you to Hannibal, Missouri yet.
I don't remember having come to Hannibal, but what a beautiful, just very tranquil place.
You've come to, this is one of the best times of year here in Hannibal. The fall is really good as well. We're well known for, we're the, not the birthplace, but we're the hometown of Mark Twain.
Oh.
So a lot of his novels, if you've read the novel Tom Sawyer or Huckleberry Finn, a lot of the places that he mentions are actual locations here in Hannibal.
Oh,
so
cool.
Maybe a trip back to explore some of those would be good. Our downtown area is really, really special. So we just, you may not know this, but we just a few weeks ago, actually I think it was a couple weeks ago, we did a showing of the movie that was based on your life.
Oh, Gifted Hands.
Gifted Hands. Yeah. And so our students were able to see that. Of course, you were played in the movie by Cuba Gooding Jr., right? And so my first kind of question, kind of fun question for you.
Well, let me tell you something interesting about that movie. You'll notice that the surgical scenes were very realistic.
Yeah.
Not like many television shows. And it's because those were real surgeons and real operating room nurses.
Oh, wow.
No, they were not Hollywood extras.
That's a great behind-the-scenes sort of tidbit there. Well, my question follows on that is, so if let's say for the sake, just for fun, if they were to make a sequel to that movie that focuses on your life since that time, you know, your career in politics and kind of where you are today, what actor would you want to play you at this point in your life?
Oh, dear. You know, I don't keep up with Hollywood very much.
Not very much. Maybe like Denzel Washington or... maybe like a, you know, Morgan Freeman?
Morgan would be good. I think I'd try playing myself.
That would be good. Yeah.
Yeah. Sign that up.
Yeah, we'll sign it up. We'll get it started. If Hollywood is listening today, we'll maybe get them on that to fast track it for you.
I was just taping some commercials that you'll be seeing before long.
Okay.
And... they said I did a good job, so we'll see.
Awesome. That's great. So I want to begin, that's just a question just for fun, but, you know, as we think about your career in politics up to this point, you were in, as everyone knows, you were in the first Trump administration, so you kind of have a probably more of a definitely insider perspective than any of us do. But now that you're not directly serving in the administration, maybe you're in an advising role, we don't know that, but... how would you kind of grade the first sort of 60 days of the second administration, the Trump administration?
Well, I'd give it a very high grade because they recognize that you got to move quickly.
Yeah.
While there's enthusiasm, and they also recognize that the American people are not patient individuals.
This is true.
They want it, and they want it now.
Yeah.
And they tend to be very reactionary, so... you got to ride the crest while it's there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So were you asked at all to be in the new administration? Were you consulted?
Multiple asks of various types. Okay. But, you know, I'm 73 years old now.
Right.
And, you know, there are much younger people who are much more energetic who are still going to be around in 20 years to see what they did.
right, exactly. Any thoughts on Elon Musk and Doge and his efforts in with efficiency in the government?
I know it's been I have to admire him. I pray for him that he will come to know the Lord.
Absolutely.
But here's a man who sacrificed a lot. He didn't have to do this.
Right, exactly.
He's lost billions of dollars. His businesses are floundering. People are attacking Tesla dealerships. He's got threats on his life.
Yeah.
And yet he persists.
He has. Right. You're right and correct. Like he doesn't have to be involved. He's got enough money where he could just
sit back and put his feet up and enjoy life
and think about how we get to Mars.
Exactly.
Exactly. This evening after your talk, we're going to do a little Q&A, and we asked people who purchased tickets to submit questions. And so I was very surprised by this. I figured people would ask about your medical career. Mm-hmm. They'd ask about obviously your thoughts on politics. But one of the items that kept coming to the surface in the questions was artificial intelligence.
Mm.
And so people want to know what Dr. Ben Carson's thoughts are on artificial intelligence, and maybe its use even in the medical field.
Yeah.
And is it friend? Is it foe? How do we view it?
Well, every good thing can be put to a bad use. AI is a perfect example of it.
Yeah.
You know, I personally suffer from it because there are all these AI advertisements all over the internet with me selling everything.
Really?
From brain pills to ED cures to heart, you just name it, they got me selling it. And you know, I can't do anything about it because I'm a public figure.
Wow.
And Congress was going to take that up a couple of years ago, and I was very much hopeful that some of the stuff would stop, but then they dropped it like a hot potato. I don't know what happened, but it was gone.
That's so interesting.
But by the same token, it's going to be great in medicine because you can analyze so many things so quickly.
Mm.
And, you know, what might take many years of research and combing through data can be done in minutes.
Absolutely. I kind of lament the fact that when I was doing my PhD work in, you know, back in 2014, if I wanted to, like, you know, cull my research, it was go to the library and pull journal articles.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's, you know, you enter something in and it'll pull and cull the journal articles for you. It'll read them and summarize them. And I thought, if only that would have saved me hours and hours of research.
And think about how AI and virtual reality will have an impact on education.
Yes.
I mean,
it already is.
Yeah,
little
already.
Kids learning about the Peloponnesian War, you can be right there.
Yeah.
You can see what's going on and what were the factors that caused it. And it's pretty amazing what it's going to be used for. But by the same token, you know how tough it is to get kids away from their Nintendo PlayStations.
Right.
What's going to happen when they can disappear into a virtual world?
It's already happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what we're facing here as a university right now is, yes, like you said, AI can be a great tool for students to do research and do it efficiently. But when they use it to write their discussion board posts online or to write a paper, that's maybe a little bit more of an improper usage. And so we're struggling with that boundaries of where is it useful, but where is it harmful?
I understand that the teachers can now use a program that will determine whether somebody used AI to create the document.
I used it today. In fact, I used it today and something came up 100% artificial intelligence.
Really?
It wasn't even any human produced. So there are programs that will tell you.
But then, of course, somebody will come up with a program that will undo all the factors that allow you to determine that it's AI produced.
That's here, too.
That's already here. Yeah, it's changing so, so rapidly. I want to pivot to my colleague, Rich. And I know Mr. Ayer has several maybe questions for you, a couple questions to ask. And so, Mr. Ayer, what are your thoughts to ask Dr. Carson today?
Well, I have a couple of questions, but I want to ask, did you like the Tesla that Donald Trump bought, President Trump? Did you see that?
I'm a Tesla owner.
Okay.
And I love Teslas, especially when you're sitting at the red light and one of those hot rod trucks comes up and goes, rah, 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 and you just go, chook. They say, way to go.
So what you're saying is you've stepped on it before. I like that.
That's
well,
good.
One I'll tell you, it was a little funny story. I was, do you know who Tony Orlando is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tony
yes.
Orlando's a friend. And I was showing him how fast the car could go one night. I said, just, okay, hold on to your seat. Watch this. And I went, and the next thing you know, there were the flashing red and blue lights. But the police didn't come after us. They just wanted us to know they were there.
Really? How fast can it go 0 to 60? Like what's?
Between 2 and 4 seconds.
Wow.
Do you have a Plaid? Tesla
no,
Plaid?
No, I just have the regular S series.
Okay.
But my wife always asks me to let her know before I'm going to accelerate.
That's good. How long have y'all been married now?
It'll be 50 years in July.
So you know. To let her know. Absolutely.
I'm curious. You have been wildly successful. And I'm just curious, at what point did you realize that you were successful?
I think I realized I was successful when I was a kid. And I was reading all of these books about inventors and entrepreneurs and the things that they could do. And it dawned on me that the person who had the most to do with you, what happened to you was you. Hmm. At that point, I knew I was going to be successful. I knew I would put in the necessary work and that it was all dependent on me, and I knew I was going to do it. So I say, we're done. We've got this.
So would you have, you already gave me a couple of measures, but do you have 2 or 3 measures for the college students that you would say these are the things you need to focus on to accomplish your dreams?
Well, I think it's very important that you recognize what you're good at. Mm-hmm. Everybody's good at something. In fact, I would go so far as to say everybody is better than just about everybody else at something. If you can find out what that is, you're way ahead of the game. Particularly when it comes to learning. If, you know, there's somebody that you admire and you try to pattern yourself after them and do things the way they did it, you're never going to go much further than they did. But if you, in fact, find out what your strength is and you really apply yourself to that, the sky's the limit.
Did you have any pushback being a Christian in the medical world? Was there any conflict there between your Christianity and what the book was saying?
Did I have some arguments? Absolutely. Yeah. I had a lot of arguments with supposedly very bright people, including Nobel Prize winning physicists, who really thought it was silly to believe in God and that God created us and created the earth and the universe. And I would just ask them questions, which, of course, they couldn't answer. And they would always say, well, we don't understand everything. And I said, I'm not sure you understand anything. Because how else are you going to explain it? How are you going to explain the order in the universe? Mm. And when you think about it, you know, their explanation is always, well, if you have enough explosions over a long enough period of time, eventually after one of them, you're going to have a well-organized universe. Mm. And I said, so what you're telling me is if I blow a hurricane through a junkyard enough times over a long enough period of time, after one of them, there'll be a 747 fully equipped and ready to fly.
That's a good one.
That's a good point. I'm gonna borrow that for my students. That's good. Yeah, that's good. So while we're on the topic of faith, Dr. Carson, of course, Hannibal LaGrange University is a faith-based institution. A biblical worldview is one of our core values. We founded by Southern Baptists, mm-hmm. Have never wavered in our commitment as conservatives, as Christians. So faith is a very important component of our identity. And we do believe that we are training the next generation of with knowledge for service, that their vocation is not just something that they do, but it's something that is God-given and God-blessed. And so I know that your faith in Jesus has played a massive role in your life, whether it be in the medical field or in politics. So talk for just a minute, share with our listeners who may be unfamiliar with your story of how your faith has played such a huge role and where have you seen it shine the brightest?
Well, you know, in my medical career, a lot of people said, Carson's a hot dog. You know, he'll do anything. But it wasn't true. Mm. I always prayed to God for wisdom and for direction and for preparation. You know, for instance, the first set of conjoined twins.
Yeah.
A few weeks or maybe a few months before I encountered them, I had an intense interest in conjoined twins. It just came up on me. And I started studying and reading the literature and trying to figure out why was it that there was such a high mortality.
Was it like a journal article that kind of came across your desk or just an interest that developed?
Just developed. And I started reading all the journals and I concluded that it was exsanguination. They would bleed to death. I said, how can you stop them from bleeding to death? And I talked to a good friend, the chief of cardiothoracic surgery at Hopkins, who did a lot of open heart surgery on little babies. I said, how do you keep them from bleeding out? And he said, there's a new technique called hypothermic arrest. We cool the body temperature, pump all the blood out, you know, stop the heart, and we can operate up to an hour before we have to pump the blood back in, warm it up, and start the hearts up.
Wow.
And I was saying, what if we got to the critical part of the separation where they always bleed to death and we put them on hypothermic arrest? And then I said, why am I thinking about this? I'm never going to see a set of conjoined twins. And a few weeks later, there they were presenting this case basically to teams all over the world and saying, could anybody figure out a way that both twins could live? Because in Europe, you know, they were told that they could separate them, but she had to decide which one would live, which one would die. She couldn't do it.
So, yeah, no one should ever have to face that decision.
But that clearly was God.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there was another set of twins I was operating on, and it reached a point where it was just impossible. There were too many vessels crossing between them. And we stopped the operation. And I suggested that we cover the area up and come back in a few months and maybe the vessels would have delineated themselves. And the doctors said, we can't keep partially separated twins alive. They'll die. And I just said, Lord, you know, I've kind of reached my limit here. And I went back in there and started operating for the next several hours. And I honestly do not remember what I did, but after the operation was over, the other surgeons said, we couldn't believe what you were doing.
Wow.
And that was the first set of complexly joined twins that were successfully separated without any neurological deficit.
It's amazing. And the Lord clearly had his hand in that.
No question about it. And then I look at, you know, things that he's done, you know, outside of the operating room. Like once I was in Alaska, and they said, you want to go see Glacier Valley? And I said, of course I want to go see Glacier Valley. So up I go, just me and a pilot in a single engine plane, over the mountains and down to Glacier Valley, and it was surreal. It was like you were on a different planet. Mm-hmm. And then heavy cloud cover came in. This plane only flew by sight. It didn't fly by instrument. You couldn't see a thing. And the pilot said, I'm going to climb as fast as possible without going into a stall, and hopefully we won't hit the mountain. Mm-hmm. And they were just climbing, can't see a thing, and I'm praying, of course.
Yeah.
Broke cloud cover and missed the mountain by 3 feet.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
I got some other airplane stories I could tell you. If you want to be safe in a plane, fly with me.
Okay. we'll remember that. We will remember that. Absolutely. As we draw kind of our time to a close on the podcast here, I did want to ask you about your foundation, your institute, ACI, American Cornerstone Institute. Could you talk for just a few minutes about what do you all do? What are your initiatives? Is there an initiative specifically you're excited about?
Yes.
That is currently underway?
Well, you know, it came about because after the first Trump administration, I said, this time I'm not going to fail retirement. I'm going to really retire and relax. But I couldn't see in the way the country was going. So a bunch of very talented people from HUD joined me, forming American Cornerstone Institute, to look at the cornerstone principles that made us into a successful country. You know, we went from nowhere to the pinnacle of the world in record time, not by coincidence, but by the values and principles that we abided by, those being our faith, which taught us how to relate to each other, love your neighbor, not cancel your neighbor if they disagree with you.
Right.
Liberty, freedom of speech, freedom of living your life the way you want to, as long as you're not infringing upon someone else. Mm. A very vital principle, and one of the things that made us such a magnet to people around the world. Mm. Community, the sense of working together. The common good was a phrase that you heard frequently from our founders. And life, honoring human life from the womb to the tomb.
Amen.
And then one of the programs we have, the pediatric component, is called Little Patriots, where we teach the children the values and principles that formed our nation.
That's excellent.
And all of our history, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Mm-hmm. But if you're objective, there's a heck of a lot more good than there is bad and ugly.
You're right.
It's an incredible history. And then we have the Executive Branch for America, which is aimed at young people, particularly college-age students, mm-hmm. to teach them how the government works. This is an online course that you can take and get certified. And it's free of charge. All of our programs are free of charge.
That's excellent.
Because we get very patriotic people to support the program. Mm.
Well, I'm happy to say today that HLGU, Hannibal Grange University, wants to support that program. So bringing you to campus, one of the ways that we're able to do that is through a grant program. Mm. That we have through a company in Quincy, Illinois. And they generously donate funds for us to bring speakers to campus and speaker mm-hmm. series. So we sold tickets for the event tonight, but we can't keep any of those proceeds. So mm-hmm. we're going to donate to you, our commitment to you, and we're going to donate online, is $23,000.
Oh, fantastic.
To your American Cornerstone Institute. And we wanted to reveal that to you today as our gift to you, Dr. Mm-hmm. Carson. For you to see fit to use in your institute to do the very things that you just described.
Well, thank you. That's wonderful news.
Yeah, and we also have something else for you and your wife, Candy, today. And so...
Uh-oh. Because we got to carry it back on the airplane.
Well, this is not... This will be fine. I think you can get this into a check bag just fine. Or, as you can see, you could put it to good use. So we'd like you to... go ahead and you and Candy, if Candy wants to come over, and you want to come over and join us for a second? And you can open that.
Candy's good at opening things.
And we just want to give you a little bit of, to take a little bit of HLGU home with you.
As a surgeon, you're better at opening. You know how to cut.
Yeah, I'm good at closing.
Yeah. good at closing.
There, I'll
take
that.
Or Rich will take that. I'll take, yeah.
Oh, Rich will take that. Oh. You see the cups and things? Nice.
Oh, beautiful.
So we got
beautiful.
You some coffee yeah. cups and.
The business department.
This one?
For, yeah, our, I might have snuck yeah. that one in.
Snuck that one in.
Those are
HLGU imprinted golf balls.
I thought they were golf balls.
Yeah, okay. So.
Cool.
There, you can use those. And then there are a couple shirts in there, yeah. T-shirts in there for you guys yeah. that say Hannibal LaGrange University.
Yeah.
And so, well, you know, when you're relaxing and down in Florida or home or wherever you are, if you want to wear your HLGU shirt and people ask you about us, you can tell them what a great experience you had at HLGU.
Well, it's going to be fun. You know, we've had a lot of fun at College of the Ozarks in Missouri.
Yeah, so. We have some colleagues down there. One of our business professors, yeah. Scott Hall, has been down there, and I know a few other professors and people out there as well.
I enjoy the institutions of higher learning that are God-centric.
Yes,
that's
amen.
That's us.
And that's us, and that's our commitment to remain that way. So thank you for joining us today on the Free Society Podcast, Dr. Carson. If you're interested in Free Society programming at Hannibal LaGrange University, you can email us at freesociety@hlg.edu, and we'll sign you up on an email list to know about our future speakers that will be coming, as well as other programming we offer across campus. So again, thank you, Dr. Carson. We're looking forward
to
your talk tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.